interviewed Not For Profit, an activist, member of an art collective, and the lead singer for Reconstruction, a punk band infused with Puerto Rican rhythms. We asked him how he translates anarchist theory into practice. Which principles of anarchism have been the most influential in your daily life?
Probably the most important principle was just trying to live outside of the system with the idea of ultimately destroying it before it destroys us. I guess for us, anarchism is more of a straight-up lifestyle because we live it every day because we know if we don't fight Babylon, then we're consumed by it. So we don't look at it as, you know, something abstract where we're outside of it and we're fighting, you know, to save society. We're really fighting to save ourselves, and ultimately we'll save society if we save ourselves.
From the onset, was music and the stage a natural form for your activism, or did it evolve over time?
I guess it evolved over time, and we started out sort of as a collective because the communities we were from were being gentrified, and we didn't really know what we could do, and most of us were actually graffiti writers. So we just kind of started out, you know, right, instead of tagging up, which is what we would normally do, we started writing political slogans and anti-gentrification slogans, and we did that for a while, and we were trying to figure out, you know, what else we could do, and we were trying to figure out what other talents people had. Some people started doing actually political education classes because they had a knack for that. Some people started just, you know, throwing stones through, you know, the windows of corporate chain stores because they had a knack for that, and because that was artistic also. And some of us found, you know, that we could actually play instruments. Some of us tried to do, you know, film. And so we basically became this artist collective that wasn't so much about the music as much as it was about using art as a weapon, as Fela would say. We could reach certain people with our music in terms of talking about the situation in Vieques or talking about other aspects of struggle through the music where we may not have been able to reach them through other means. Graffiti only does so much, and a lot of people, you know, look at it as, you know, an illegal activity, which it is an illegal activity, but it's not necessarily bad, you know, but a lot of people look at it that way. And a lot of people look at, you know, throwing a rock through the window of a store as being, you know, bad somehow. But, you know, nobody seems to look at music as being bad. So we started using music as a way of reaching people with the same message that we were trying to reach them with by throwing a stone through a window.
Throughout your years of involvement in different anarchist collectives, have you seen increasing diversity in the composition in terms of gender and ethnicity?
I'd say not sufficiently. I think it's only recently that folks have started calling themselves, you know, APOC, anarchist people of color. And the reason for that is I think most people of color who have been involved in anarchist movements tend to be, you know, as Fishbone would say, the fly in the buttermilk. People of color surrounded by white folks. It's for that reason that a lot of people of color have decided, okay, well, we've got to form our own collective of people of color. I mean, the problem has always been that, talking about the United States, a lot of white anarchists are out to save the country and save the world. Whereas for us, it's really like, okay, well, these things that we're fighting against, whether it be the WTO or, you know, FTA, whatever, are things that we're affected by every day. And so for us, it's always like, okay, well, we're, as anarchists and people of color, we're looking at it from an anarchist point of view, but most people of color are simply looking at it from the point of view of surviving and trying to survive America, and we're trying to survive this planet. We're not trying to save it. We'll save it later once we figure out how to survive it. There aren't enough people of color involved in most of the anarchist groups that I've ever, you know, been involved in, which is why we started doing our own thing. For the longest time, you know, a lot of people of color you talk to don't call themselves anarchists. You know, they don't identify as anarchists, but yet they've been living as anarchists, you know, all their lives. When I was a kid, my father was a Puerto Rican nationalist, and the Puerto Rican nationalists lived in El Barrio, which is East Harlem. And they basically created their own autonomous communities because they didn't want to, you know, legitimize the authority over them by the police or by the government. So they would create their own autonomous communities. They would feed each other. They would clothe each other. You know, they would deal with their own problems, and they wouldn't get the police involved. You know, they basically say, fuck authority. But they didn't consider themselves anarchists. They considered themselves Puerto Rican nationalists. And it was only as an adult that I started acknowledging the use of the word anarchist, and that was mainly because it became an easier way to talk to other people of color who weren't anarchists about what we were doing. You know, it was easier to say, well, okay, we're anti-authority, and that's what anarchists are. Oh, you know, we try to feed each other, and we try to, you know, make our own food or steal our own food, and that's what anarchists do.
Do you find there are many Puerto Rican youths that are open to anti-authoritarian politics or anarchist politics?
I think a lot of Puerto Rican youth are very much open to anti-authoritarian politics. There's always the problem with the word anarchism because it's perceived as something created by dead white men who wrote books. And then it's looked at now as something that's predominantly white middle-class kids. And there's always been this, you know, this fear, because a lot of times when we get involved in demonstrations, the first ones who are snatched up by the police and go to prison are the black and brown youth. So there's always been this fear that, oh, anarchism, that's a white thing. So for us it's always been a question of breaking it down as to what it is we're trying to do, and then afterwards explaining, okay, well, this is actually anarchism. You know, it's not owned by any particular, you know, so-called racial group or so-called ethnic group. It's easier to move a middle-class white kid into anarchist politics than it is a street kid who's trying to figure out how he's going to eat the next day and how he's going to survive the next day.
Have you ever come into contact with people who felt it was an inherent contradiction that you were so passionate and adamant about Puerto Rico's national liberation as anarchists?
Yeah, I mean, definitely. It's generally from white anarchists we get the question of, oh, how can you be a nationalist and be an anarchist? But our understanding in terms of Puerto Rican nationalism is simply that we're trying to survive and we're trying to stay alive. You know, there was a Puerto Rican nationalist, Pedro Viso Campos, who said that the U.S. wants the birdcage without the bird. In other words, they'd be quite happy to take Puerto Rico and kill off all the Puerto Ricans. So we don't have the luxury to say nationalism is bad when it's a question of our very existence. We've already been killed off once. We were originally indigenous people called Taínos. And now if you go to the museum, you're told that Taínos are extinct. So technically, we are a people that are extinct. And now we're trying to just survive. Puerto Rico being the oldest colony on the planet, if you are a so-called anarchist or a revolutionary and you're trying, you know, to destroy the system of imperialism and colonialism and enslavement, then you have an obligation to try to free Puerto Rico. Puerto Ricans are the same as other indigenous people in the Americas who were destroyed. You know, their nations were destroyed. Our nation is holding on by a thread. But we're not even the same people we were 500 years ago, because the first people we were annihilated.
Ask for work. If they do not give you work, ask for bread. If they do not give you work or bread, then take the bread. Emma Goldman.
Direct action.
I was asked today by a person in the media. They were talking about Queen's Park last year. They were talking about June 15th. They were talking about all the folks who came there that day and stood up and defended and physically defended themselves in the face of what came down on them. He didn't quite put it like that. What he said to me was, do you regret the violence? And what I say is that when I think of that man who got dragged 30 feet this morning in a cardboard box, and when I think of the brother, the dear friend of OCAP, who we buried last week, who lived on the streets, and when I think of the northern native community of Pekanjikum, where three young women have recently taken their lives, and where the suicide rate is 36 times the national average, then the only thing that I regret is that we haven't yet stopped this government!
Many anarchists believe in direct action, a basic principle of anarchism, and a tactic to overthrow the state. But what exactly is direct action? What does it mean? What are its aims, and what are its capabilities?
to say, the last thing I want to say, and I really, really, really want to say this, is the notion that anybody can accept that a 40-year-old man is living and sleeping in a box. Because if that was my mother, or my father, or my brother, or my sister, or my friend, I don't give a fuck what you say about violence, I would stop that now! And I would do what it would take! And if you get in my way to make sure that that man gets housing, or that he gets enough to eat, I will move you!
Direct action is one way that anarchism puts its radical ideals of justice into practice now. We will now hear excerpts from a speech by Anne Hansen. Anne wrote the book Direct Action and spent 7 years in jail because of her involvement in the revolutionary guerrilla group, the Squamish Five. Here, she will speak to the potential of direct action, its successes, and its relation to violence.
So, I think that there's a difference between terrorism and generally what is acknowledged as direct action. Direct action has evolved out of a tradition, I believe, of anarchism, which, again, I'm talking here more about the sort of more militant forms of direct action, and I hope I've made it clear that I think that, you know, the whole diversity of tactics or the whole diversity of choices of what people do should be considered equal and respected. But I think because of my past, I am focusing a little bit more on the more controversial aspects. So, you know, I'm not trying to say that the only way to go is militant direct action, but that's probably... that is where I'm focusing because of my history, and I'm sure that's what, you know, people are associating me with, more so than the music sector or the art sector. I think that direct action in its more militant forms, when being focused on property destruction, is a more effective way of going about it. It deters investors, slows down the growth of projects, threatens the assets of multinational corporations. I don't see property destruction as being an act of violence. I don't think that property as such deserves the sort of respect and the rights that it's getting today. I think that people should be getting those rights and respects, and the environment and all the other forms of life that exist on this planet. There's such a distorted view of violence in the mass media that I think too many people, even in the movement, are indoctrinated with it. For example, when anti-globalization protesters, let's say, smash a window in a Nike store, I don't think that window in and of itself, or the smashing of it, is an act of violence. And it's certainly in relation to the policies of Nike, which is to subcontract out their sneaker manufacturing to private contractors in the third world, where they're employing people at below living wages. You know, these sweatshops are surrounded with barbed wire so that union organizers can't get in, and they know that in those countries the reason that they can pay such low wages is because there's no environmental or health laws instituted to protect the workers. To me, that is the real violence, not the breaking of a window. What we chose to do, in retrospect, had its successes, and I'll go over that shortly. It had its limitations as well. We based our model on the Western European guerrilla groups that were active in the 70s, and they in turn had based their models on the sort of Marxist-Leninist Palestinian groups, and also on the whole idea of the South American urban guerrilla organization. In retrospect, I think that people here in North America, we have to be creative thinkers, because the difference between us and even people in Europe, let's say, and people in South America and in the Arab world is that we do not have a large majority of the population who necessarily identify with us. That could change, but at this point in time, I think if you went into suburbia, very few people would describe themselves as revolutionaries. And so I think that there are other models that may be more effective that are in existence today. Well, I mean, even I think the Black Bloc often calls themselves the anti-capitalist convergence, but that type of technique where you have little affinity groups that adhere to certain principles that can act, but then go back into the mainstream again, into their communities and work, is probably, and also the ELF in the States, are probably more effective models at this point in time. They're not...
Ultimate episode of Anarchism, Freedom on the Air. We hope it has been an agreeable experience. Please tune in next week as we continue our exploration of anarchism. This has been a production of CKUT's Community News Collective, anarchistically rocking your world since 3 weeks ago. Yo, yo.